The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline. If you are obsessive compulsive, press 1 repeatedly. If you are codependent, ask someone to press 2 for you. If you have multiple personalities, press 3, 4, 5, and 6. If you are paranoid, we know what you are and what you want. Stay on the line and we'll trace your call. If you're delusional, press 7 and your call will be transferred to the mothership. If you are schizophrenic, listen carefully and a small voice will tell you which number to press. If you're depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer you. If you're dyslexic, press 69696969. If you have a nervous disorder, please fidget with the hash key until the beep. After the beep, please wait for the beep. If you have a short-term memory loss, please try your call again later. And if you have low self-esteem, hang up. All our operators are too busy to talk.
Now, I want to talk to you because you're obviously upset.
Permission is granted.
Glad I met you. I'm glad I met you, James.
I was not considering the fact that I, in fact, am the third man, capital T, capital D, capital M. But I am.
I want to show you something.
Let's take off all our clothes.
And maybe that's true. And that's what I said.
That's how we used to sing it. I'm sorry. That's just the way we used to sing it. It's the way you should sing it from now on.
But look at this. What is this?
I hate to put a negative spin on this, because it's great to drink, and everyone loves to drink.
They say you should not drink alcohol when it's so hot.
And I've talked about this, too, in the past, when I talked about soccer moms.
That was so good.
No, I didn't talk about soccer moms.
Excuse me for saying it. It's not even my place to say it.
I'll talk about soccer moms who became roller derby moms. And don't...
It was the old stuff.
And don't you think I haven't stopped. I have given up on the roller derby thing. Let's just get Pi Kim on the phone.
Wait. Where are the phones?
They took the phones. Huh?
We're not using Skype. Tonight, today, this afternoon.
You're such a hero. You're so rich. How come you're coming down here and waste your time with such a bunch of bums?
But let's not get into that. Let's not talk about me. Even though it is all about me. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about Nancy.
What did I learn as a kid on Western? You don't sell a guy one car.
But I believe that, you know, we could have a lot more fun. I'm not trying to be politically correct here either.
So I don't know, do I? Let me have your attention for a moment.
Do what you gotta do if you're a neo-postmodernist, and I know you are.
What is that?
Look, just go, Jay, the best thing to do is to just Google the gal.
Let's talk about something important.
I really am when it comes to this thing.
Let's talk about something important.
Just a whole nother angle just took place in my head.
Put that coffee down.
But let's forget about drugs and medicine. Let's talk about sex.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
That's going to be happening. I got some things to cover before we get there. Dirty Things Get Stiff by Frank Cotolo.
It may mean something to you. It may not. I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Does that mean that if you dirty things stand, dirty things get stiff?
Secure the template. Set the backside guide to appropriate locks and basket. The backside guide tabs include setting of jig. Possessing the template. What the hell am I reading?
Oh, divine.
That's Scatola over there. You know what I mean?
Following program is brought to you by the producers and the sponsors. Enter this theater at your own risk. We are not responsible for any injuries incurred while you listen and give you fair warning that anything you hear may be held against you. The Bard of Broadcasting now takes over the airwaves, the internet, the World Wide Web, and chronicles. It's that thing I do live on Thursday nights, and for all you others, listening as if it's live. From ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to city, from Othello and into every bordello. As there are still many there, my name is Frank Catolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of this show. I'm the subject, but I'm not the subject of the show. I am the subject of the title of the show, Catolo Chronicles. It's not the Catolo Chronicles. In Spanish, it's not El Catolo Chronicles. Oh, no, it would be El Chronicles del Catolo. No, not true. These are not the Chronicles of Catolo, these are Catolo Chronicling. As we go along, we welcome you to the live broadcast, even though some of you are not listening live. Not that you're not alive, what I mean is some of you listening on our affiliates across this great big globe of ours, where meteors explode into space and we keep revolving and going round and round. But we are here, and we're here live, Y2K. Plus 13. How the hell did we get here? Oh boy, that is going to be a question that we're going to keep in mind through the rest of the evening, considering that two people will soon be on this microphone, not on this very microphone, but two people will soon be in the theater right here talking, and these two people were essential to one another in terms of, in many, many ways. First and foremost, a friend. In your life, you may have lots of people you know. You may have people that you have fun staying with, going with. You might even have people you marry and love. You may even have people you marry and don't love. You don't love your boyfriends, your girlfriends, your friends, your uncles, your relatives, everybody. But in the scheme of things, you only ever have a couple of true friends. And that's a good thing. You can't be a friend to everybody, but you could only be a friend. And those kind of things just happen. They click. That's the stuff they called chemistry all of my life. And on this show, I'm bringing back someone who has not talked with me in the same theater for 38 years. Now, I know a lot of you, this is really funny, a lot of you, because I know I have a pretty young audience out there, and you guys and gals coming out of college or still in college, or the ones who just got out of college,
you know, you're sitting around going, 38 years. You haven't talked to somebody in 38 years. You don't even have a concept of three decades and almost four decades minus two. You don't have a concept of this. That's a great many years. But the man who will be on this show with me is truly and has been truly always has been a friend. From the moment we met, we clicked, we snapped, we crackled, we popped. And we've been through so many adventures together. I'm on this thing called radio. This is a thing that I do on Thursday night as just a spinoff of so many things that I have done. And I started out on radio with this fellow. A lot of people that you know as a single solo performer started out with in a team, and the team of this man and me, the theme of the team is comedy. Tom Savino, who is still spelling his name, he's one of the influences, still spelling his name with an H, because somewhere along the line I said you got to use H, T-H-O-M, not T-O-M. We were always thinking things like that, always thinking funny. He's a great, funny person. If you read the blog, I did not over-exaggerate any of that. But first and foremost, a friend. And those are the things, and these are the people who really help you guide your life. These are the people who you need to embrace in memory, in influence, and you need to applaud, and you need to always give credit to these people. So this guy is just a guy, and yet he's still a guy. And as long as we're on the face of the earth, we're friends and we're connected in a strange way. And I say strange only because not everybody gets connected like this. If you have anybody like that in your life, you're one lucky person. And so is that person. No matter what you do, no matter how much you see each other, no matter where you go, you're always there. People who inspire, influence you, and help you do your best. Now, I know this sounds like I'm writing a self-help book, but I'm not, because I cannot help myself and I cannot help you. But the appearance of Tom Savino on this show has something I have been trying to accomplish, and I am getting accomplished as long as that Skype works. We've tested this. We put it through the ringer. We've done everything we need to do, and I believe he's going to sound great over the Skype, and we're going to sound like we're right here together. I'm going to spring some surprises upon him in terms of past weird things. You're going to hear some things that go way back, and some things that have never really hit, radio waves. But we're not going to sit here. Also, I want to tell you this. We're not just going to sit here. You can't help it. There's going to be some talk about one another and with one another, but we're not just going to sit here and do that, and just pat each other back and say, hey, you're my pal, because we're not going to do that. We're going to also talk about things that he's done in later on in his life, in these 38 years, including, I'm not kidding you, and though he's a great sense of humor, so he's not going to fall victim to, this person can never fall victim to anything I say, that's for sure. So we're going to have some fun talking about meditation, which he is an expert. He's kind of a Maharaji. He's kind of a, but you know what? Here's what I love, and that is that, he retains his sense of humor no matter how spiritual he gets. And he's always been kind of a nut when it comes to, extra sensory superstitious stuff. But, I was thinking of him really strongly last night as I'm watching Peter Popoff. And I don't even know if that's how you say his name, but I saw him again last night, early this morning. He buys this, time on television, on cable. Peter Popoff, I think it's Popoff. P-O-P-O-F-F, or Popoff? It can't be Popoff. It's probably Popoff. This guy who's selling people, and I'm like, I'm saying this, and I'm not telling you, not by any means saying that Mr. Savino is a charlatan. I'm not. I'm talking now about a charlatan, Peter Popoff. Why do I think of him? I think of him because, if Tom could do something like Peter Popoff, but no, that's a complete absolute farce, and have a lot of fun with it. But the people out there who don't, like Peter Popoff, who sells, and I swear to you, this is true, and I know I mentioned him last week, and I just got this on my mind. I might do a whole show about it and get somebody from his organization, whatever organization that might be. A guy who sells Supernatural. This is why I thought of Tom, because Tom has always been interested in the supernatural. But this guy Popoff sells supernatural debt redemption. That's it. Supernatural debt redemption. He sells you water in a little bag. You send to his church money, and am I bleeding? No, I'm not. Okay. I got that winter nosebleed problem that they talk so much about. Maybe they're not talking about it in your neighborhood, but they're talking about it here. Okay. Peter Popoff. Okay. What did I just say? I said water. You get this water, miracle water. He sells you, and he's in the mail, miracle water. You anoint your bank book. You anoint your, your bills and debt documents with this water. And he claims, and he has people who do testimonials on the show. And they come on, they say, I had $96,000 debt, but since I anointed my bill with the miracle water that you sent, Peter, mysteriously, the debt is gone. And they got a note in the mail, or somebody called up and said, you don't owe that money anymore. And there was one lady last night, I couldn't believe this. It's one thing to say there's you can get rid of $2,000, $800, $750,000 in debt, this lady. Now, this lady doesn't look like, in any possible way, she could be the type of person that has that much credit. $750,000, $750,000. And she had it. She says, it's gone. Why? Because Peter Popoff sold her the miracle water. Okay, but this is not a show about Peter Popoff. But what I'm saying is that we're going to be talking to Tom Savino about his more serious side, which you're going to find out as you will find out. He still takes as lightly as anything else. But I wanted to say all this together as one big giant thing. Because more so than not, this is a very close friend of mine, and I don't know what I'd be doing in certain right now in certain angles of my life if it was not for various influences that he didn't try. You know, a person who influences you truly inspires you in a way that person doesn't even know. They just do what they do, and somehow you get ideas. It's not like somebody. It's not like a teacher. It's not like somebody comes up to you and says, here's what you need to do. And you think back to the teachers or people who taught you stuff. And you say, hey, you taught me how to do that. See, we didn't teach each other how to do anything. But together, we created and we did just wonderful stuff. And whether or not a lot of it was successful, and a lot of it was successful, as I said in the blog, he was the brain. He contributed creatively. We were a team, but he was a tremendous brain when it comes to all sorts of things. Like, he could have thought up the miracle water thing. That's what I'm saying. I mean, he could actually have thought it up because he was always looking for ideas that he said, dare I say it, this idea will help us rule the world. A great I can't give you any more of a introduction other than to tell you that you should sit back sometime after the show and think about 1, 2, 3 people. I don't even know if you ever have 3 people in your life like this. I'm fortunate enough to have a few people in my life like this who you could truly call a friend, who define the word and make you understand that you owe them stuff that they never want to be repaid for giving you, and they don't even know they gave to you. And so I want to set all this up, because when you're going to hear two people talking on this platform, we were actors together and comedians together on the radio. We did things way back before. We're talking way back. Way back. We're talking, and I know a lot of you, like I said, 38 years. What are you talking about? That was the end of our teamship. Is it teamship? It's not relationship, because we all have a relationship. Teaming? Whatever. But what I'm saying is that way before that, doing things on the radio, you don't even know what is done on the radio, because you have an iPhone and you have this and you listen to these shows and files and podcasts and all sorts of things. So we go back, way back. where it's like, it's going to be like, Moses and Methuselah to a lot of you people, because you're so young. And I just want to impart upon you, if that is indeed the word. Hey, he's also great at English. He's an English teacher right now, aside from doing many, Eastern spiritual things, that he does and teaches. But he's also an English teacher. And he's a man who wanted to write a book, and I love the name, I love the title of this book. I gotta remember it now. It's an English catch thing. Oh my goodness, I hate when this happens. It's when he's, it ends with I. He'll tell you I'll remember it later. But he's going to be on the line here shortly. He might be on the line already. But in the meantime, and we're going to hit him with a couple of real things. We hope that will work. And please bear with us. Some of these things you hear have been digitally restored, but not in the true sense of it. God, now this is. I hate when this happens. I didn't expect to try to remember it. In the meantime, in between time, we'll sell some books, and we'll come back, and we'll get Tom Savino on for as long as we can have him.
My name is Bethany, and in 8 years,
whoa, not you.
Where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades, parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
You hear that?
My name is...
Bethany, get out of here, okay? Let's get the phone, because I think Tom's on the phone right now. Is he?
Yes, he is.
He is. Oh, my goodness. I didn't know you were going to have, a video thing.
How come it didn't happen last time?
No, last time it did not happen, but you are on... Well, they can't see you. Only I can see you. And you can't see me because I don't have a cam, but...
Oh, okay.
But that's okay. So what are you looking into right now? Nothing? Just into your computer?
Wait, I'm hearing a delay. Let me get off your show here.
Let me get off your show. I'm sorry, it didn't work out, really.
Hello, are you there?
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm here.
Okay. No, but I was listening to the show.
Oh, that's why. Yeah.
Oh, I'm still listening to it.
Well, you're gonna. Well, there shouldn't
I just
be
got a, on the show,
but there shouldn't be a delay.
Why is there a delay?
Because we don't have, because we're going straight on through all sorts of equipment that doesn't, well, just turn it down. Do you have a set?
Okay.
Oh, do you have to, or does that turn everything down?
It turns everything down.
Okay, well then just turn that off and stay on Skype. And then.
I'll just be on Skype.
Yeah, just be on Skype. You can always hear the whole thing later. I'm going to play some stuff. You'll be able to hear it through the speakers anyway.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, now?
I got rid of your show.
Okay. You and a bunch of other people. Let me tell you. This is Tom Savino. Yeah. I've been talking about him. Here he is. These two voices now meet and overlap and do whatever they do together for the first time on the air in, I believe it's 38 years.
Wow, yeah. It's unbelievable how long it's been. But I heard your intro, and I really appreciate that. And I think it's true. There are very few people in your life that you're connected with that you stay connected with, even if you don't talk to them for a long time or connect with them the way you did before.
Yeah, I think people take, when you're younger, maybe you take advantage of certain things or you don't see it as clearly, but as time goes on, and certainly when people become separated because they just go on with their lives and stuff, whether they stay in touch at any rate or what have you, you begin to understand how certain people affect you. And I think, close friends, people who clicked as we did, it's just, it's amazing how many things come up that are just related to my relationship, that, they came from my relationship with you.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I have to have the same experience for you. Yeah, even though I'm not doing radio, but I'm still.
Oh no, I'm not even. It has
still
so
writing and.
Yeah, it has so much to do with everything else. By the way, everybody, you can go and we're going to try and get Tom a whole bunch of Twitter followers tonight too, because he does tweet some very humorous things at
TJ Savino at Twitter.
It's SAVINO at Twitter.
TJ Savino at Twitter.
And yes. you're also being, by the way, I might add, you're also being, and that's a good thing that we have, that you have, actually, it's very strange that suddenly there's a picture of you that you're on here, because you're going to be part of a documentary which is being filmed, taped, or whatever they call it right now. You know, what do you call it anymore? You know, you can't say, I played a record, I'm taping.
Yeah.
So you're going to be in that. We'll talk about that later. But anyway, so I'm glad you got the picture there too, because you can't see it, but it can see you.
Okay, well, I could relate to that.
Now a number. Okay, so
yes, go on.
The number of things that I guess we'll just set up with people, because I was all week because I knew you were going to be on. I'm with some various acquaintances and friends I have, and I'm talking about things that you know, they're just laughing at these things, but you were directly involved in a lot of this stuff, specifically college. And I was talking about, you know, on this show, I'm always telling people that we make so many mentions of things on this show, and a lot of the audience that listens are, you know, they're younger people. They're all digital minded and stuff. So I, you know, you make references. I can't stop and annotate everything I talk about, but I make these references and I tell people to write it down. You know, get a notebook and write it down.
Yeah.
No, you're laughing already because you know what I'm going to say, right?
Quick, write it down.
You know, and I was telling, and everybody, I mean, this Dr. Fabianic must be dead for I don't know how long. Okay.
Yeah.
But you were the only.
I'm impressed that you remember his name, though, because certainly remember what he did and writing the things down and erasing them almost simultaneously.
You know, people don't believe me when I tell them this stuff, and he's such a cartoon. And I'm always telling people every time I say, you know, write down, and then later on, you know, go look it up on your Google or what have you. But I always immediately. Was I channel him, and it's like, Craig, write this down. Remember? Write this down.
Yes.
With that crazy.
Of course, you remember the situation as to how he took over the class, because we had that other teacher who was very high standards, way higher standards than the level of our math class, and everybody was failing, and we protested, and we had a walkout, and
nobody understands the school, and I'm going to mention it because I don't, you know, I still get mail from them, what have you, but and you know, it's a good school, and but we were in a very interesting situation because the school itself, the New York Institute of Technology, was located in had a big campus in Long Island out there in New York.
Westbury, Long Island, yeah.
Westbury, correct. And but we went to this, like, spin-off.
Yeah. And we had the spin-off campus, or as my students would call it, the cheap-ass campus.
The cheap-ass campus we had in a Knights of Pythias building. That's the first place we resided, on 72nd Street and Broadway in New York City.
Yeah.
And I was telling, and you know, it's amazing because the names are coming back to me last night, too. I was talking about some of the other teachers. I mean, Dr. Fabianic is the only one I've mentioned here on the show. But boy, what a cast of cartoon characters. And I was telling somebody about our philosophy teacher, Professor Conlon. Wasn't it Conlon?
Yeah.
Conlon.
It was, yes. It's amazing you remember these.
I have some of these memories, and I was telling somebody how you always skipped class, and then the final, and I was always impressed. I talked about this on the show before too. I was always impressed at the fact that that Professor Conlon got really a PO'd that you weren't there, and then he gave you a special final. Remember? Do you remember the final?
No.
You don't remember that?
Wait a minute. Yeah, wait. prove the existence of God.
He does. What see? You see? It came right back to him.
Yeah.
And it was like, no, I passed the course. I mean, I was there more times than Tom was there. And yet Tom, who, you know, shows up. And then this guy gives him, said, I'm going to give you a final. When he's done for if he hasn't been here, you know. And then the guy hands him like one question, the professor, who was a guy who did this all the time. For some reason or another.
You know, you do remember how he was talked about the difference between Ocean Parkway and Ocean Avenue.
Yes, right. That's right. Yes, philosophically.
A lot of people think it's Ocean Parkway, but it's really Ocean Avenue. Or don't get confused with Ocean Avenue and Ocean Parkway.
The Parkway and the Avenue, a philosophical, you know, quiz in itself. But let me go back here for a second. So Tom gets this, so he comes out of class and he has, and he's passed. And I went, wow, that's amazing. Why was it so quick? And he said, he just gave me one question. And you told him the question was, and I went, had been to the class and I didn't realize it. And oddly enough, see, this is how this also is embedded in me. When Jack, my son, was, I think, 7 or 8,
yeah,
and he had some kind of a, I don't know, spiritual conflict, or I don't know what happened to him. And I said, okay, I'm going to teach you how to prove the existence of God. He was 7, and it was all because of you. Because you passed this test and proved the existence of God, and one, and you passed the whole course, and I was so impressed, and it stayed with me forever. Because
I wish I remembered my answer now, because
it was the prime. It's the prime mover theory.
Yeah, that was. That's right. Yeah,
and that's how I taught Jack, and it was, and that. So there's just one little ridiculous thing, although maybe not be so ridiculous, but. So, Mr. Conlon. So I'm telling these people, and you know, I'm telling people about these stories, and they're going, "You come on, you're making this up. This is another one of your stories." You know, they never know what's true and what's not true. But no, it's absolutely true. And then I started to remember I remembered last night. And now I was telling everyone about Mr. Wigatall, too.
Oh, Mr. Wigatall, yeah.
Now, well before there was any, forget about digitals and stuff, but before there was anything that you could turn on your television that wasn't just a local channel, in other words, before there was cable of any kind, there was Mr. Wigatall. Remember my voice?
Oh, yeah, I remember. And I remember how we laughed at him.
Yes.
We scoffed at him. In the cafeteria later, we said, this guy thinks people are going to pay for TV.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. And oddly enough, again, you know, he explained to us why cable TV even came about, because of the hills and the you know, because it had to get into places where TV couldn't get.
The signal, yeah.
But this
cable is kind of the United States Postal Service of signals.
Yeah.
it'll go anywhere.
But he was obsessed. He was obsessed with this. And I don't even know what was the name of that class. Do you remember?
Communication something.
Something, yeah.
You know, and then they gave, of course, they have to have these numbers after it, you know. Communications 302, you know, you focus on whatever, cable, you know, pay TV.
Yeah.
Remember, that was a concept. We couldn't imagine people. Geez, Frank, the world's changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
People pay for TV. They pay for water. We used to laugh at that. Imagine people paying for water.
Yeah. Yeah, nuts. And well, in New York, the water was so good, nobody cared. That's why nobody went to Jersey, because the water there stunk. But so I'm just going over some of these schools, because nobody could believe that all these characters existed in the same place. Do you remember remember the psychology teacher we had that was a priest?
Yes, I
don't remember his
totally
name.
Forgot about him until you just mentioned it now, but yes, I do. I don't remember his name.
A Catholic priest who taught psychology.
Yeah, interesting.
It was, how did we, you know,
ironically, with today's problems, too.
It's almost like this was kind of like this college, this spinoff campus in New York. I think was kind of like the penal colony for
yeah.
for the professors. There was this other one. Did you have Professor Henry? He was a math guy. It was incredible. I've talked about this guy too. He could fill an entire board. Do you remember Dr. Henry?
Now, you know, earlier I said that the professor who said, quick, write it down. Maybe I was confusing
That was Dr. Fabianic.
With the math guy. Yeah, Henry was the math guy, and he filled the board. It's amazing, you know. It was just, it was all Greek to me.
And then one day, his ballpoint pen broke. It snapped open, or he was playing with it, and this is one of those pens we're talking about. They still make them. You get them from, I guess they're good for advertising. You know, it's got a top and a bottom, and it's got a refill and a spring.
Yeah.
And one day, Dr. Henry's thing broke, and he could not put it back together. I also talked about Mr. Carden.
Oh, John Carden.
John Carden, the radio.
The words,
Now, you remember, of course, the very first radio class, broadcasting class we ever had. You want to tell that story?
Yes. And actually, you know, I was going to ask you, being on the radio every week, that do you still use a Windex can? probably not.
No, there's no turntables anymore either.
Yeah. People are saying, what the hell are these guys talking about? Yeah.
This actually happened. There actually was a school, and we took communication arts. Which is originally, and the odd thing about Tom and I, or Tom and me, what was the name of that book you were going to, the English book you were going to write?
That was,
it didn't end with I, but the phrase ends with I, or me, and you met me. I got it. Woe is I.
Woe is I, yeah. But actually,
Woe is I.
Mistaken. I wasn't going to write that. I somebody wrote that.
Oh, I thought.
I own it. I use it as a reference. I do use it as a reference. It's a, you know, it's a grammatic book on grammar and usage. And the correct way to say what everybody says, woe is me, is really woe is I.
I get really Nazi-like with the language in on the show. Even when we read things or we just hear things, it's just amazing how the English language is being. Completely, it's being corrupted beyond belief. And we're in broadcasting. It's unbelievable.
I see it all the time on television. And you know, it's funny. When I do see it, I say, these people wouldn't even pass the cheap-ass New York Institute of Technology.
The cheap-ass. They wouldn't even make
even
it.
Even that campus, they wouldn't pass, you know.
Crazy.
Yeah, we had some standards, you know. And I hear... things like, that make me cringe when I hear them.
I have been nuts. Well, I just don't know where it comes. You know, they make things up and then they other people imitate them. I don't want to go through this again because the listeners know I go nuts when weathermen talk about there being tornadic activity.
Tornadic
activity. And I talked to a weatherman. And he didn't understand that he made that up, or someone made that up. They call it tornadic activity, which means there's tornadoes in the area, that you can't say there's tornadoes in the area, or there's, what's wrong with, that? Cause I said to him, I said, will there be any hurricanic activity, you know? Or what about tsunamic activity? Where do they get these things? But we don't need to go into that. But anyway,
I am working on a book that I have been compiling since for 38 years, or since I've been an English teacher, which is not that long. But it's coming along. It is Endangered Feces.
I remember that title. I didn't know you were actually writing that. That was another title. I remember. Yeah, Endangered Feces. You want to explain that?
And, It is a compilation, actually, a compilation of errors that I've come across over these many years from student papers, you know. You know, it's interesting.
Yes. How long have you been teaching?
I've been teaching 26 years now.
Oh, God.
26 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you teach
the people probably know, you probably mentioned over these years on your show that, you know, we both came out here to theoretically to write scripts and make $1 million in the movies. And
well, here, let me tell everyone here, because they don't know where you are located.
Oh, yeah.
See, there's another thing. People would have said they don't know where you are. They don't know where you are what? They don't know where you are dreaming. They don't know where you are eating. They don't know where you are located. So I have to tell everyone. He's in California. I talk a lot about California because I still love California, and that's where we both were there for a long time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I lost my point. What was I saying?
So you've been teaching for 28 years. And over that time, kids have made some really, really funny mistakes.
Yes, yes. Of course, I will not. The names of the innocent shall remain. What do we used to say in Dead Air? We used to do the parody of
Dragnet.
Dragnet. Yeah. Only the names of the innocent shall be
what,
something or other.
I don't remember that. In fact, I do have a surprise for you, and I think you'll be able to hear it over the. We're not going to do it like right exactly right now, but we're going to do it shortly. I have one or two things that I think you'll just be totally embarrassed to hear.
Oh, great!
People don't understand. Oh, they need to understand this because, you know, people, especially today, that like they'll watch things. You know, watch movies like on TNT or Turner and stuff or whatever, and they see these old black and white movies, and they just hate it because it's black and white. And then they go, that's so corny. That's so, you know, as if, you know, humor is so sophisticated today. What we're going to play is what I'm going to play is a couple of things from a show that we created we did it live for a while and then we wanted to syndicate it, and the syndicate, that's where we went wrong. Because the world was not ready for that on radio at the time, but we did live for a long time on in New York and New Jersey. Princeton, you know, remember Princeton?
Of course. WPRB, Princeton, New Jersey.
That's correct.
Yeah. We did, they played some of our tape things, I believe, but we also did a live show from there.
Yes.
They
played out there. They played that, and we did a live show from there. And I'm talking about, don't even mention the years. That goes back way too far. But But we did do things like that, and maybe, I don't know, maybe we should do that then before the 10th hour and give people an idea of how nutty we were, because I have something. I just have to cue it up. We used to do – I mean, I laugh at these things still, and it is kind of ridiculous. But people – I hope people even get this. We used to do parodies on TV shows. That's what Tom was talking about. Dragnet was – Magnet.
Yeah.
Magnet. And let me see if I can land. I got to get this thing. Let me get this thing queued up. And what did we – tell them what we called the – we would do all these – what was the name of the routine that played the shows, the fake TV shows? Do you remember?
The Mice is White, you mean?
No, The Mice is White. He's got all this stuff. He's got all his things. I'm looking for 8:45. Yeah, we'll do it right here now. Let me find 8:45 on this particular tape that we got. You'll be able to hear this. Because you can hear through the speakers. I'm going to play something here. Let's see if we can get this.
This is from our early radio days.
Right. Yeah, this is from I don't know if this has ever been on radio. What I'm going to play for you right now. Let's see if I can get it. 30 and 40. Oh, it's exactly right here. Yeah. This is a routine. It's a produced routine from the Dead Air show that never, well, I think one episode what made it, and we could talk about that particular Holocaust later. But here's something. I think you can. Let me just tell me before I cue this thing up. Can you hear this? Can you?
A very interesting story.
Yes.
It might make for.
Okay. All right. So here it is. We're going to now play from a show that was titled Illness. He laughed immediately. But now this is, these are not in jokes, people. These are not in jokes. But remember, you might not. I don't know if you're going to understand the satire. This is a satire on. I'll just tell you this. You'll hear this. This is a satire on a TV show which became a movie called The Fugitive. Okay? Do you have any idea? Tom, you're probably going to remember this eventually.
Yeah.
Remember there was a TV show. A lot of people don't know there was a TV show. They just saw the movie with the...
Yeah. But the movie, of course, was based on the TV show.
Correct. This, before there was a movie, and the TV show, I don't know if it was even over. I don't even know if it run through. This is the satire we did. And we're going back to are we going back to a 74, 74 something?
Wow.
74, 5, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The mics will be live. Anything you want to say, you can talk in the meantime or Olaf, what have you. But here it is. It's an episode of the satires we've done on television called Wasteland Playhouse. And now people are going, well, what does that mean? Tell them Wasteland. Tell them where that reference.
Okay. Well, since, Frank and I were in the famous Cheap Ass New York Institute of Technology in Manhattan, we were studying communication arts. And one of the big subjects that came up in every course, it seemed, was I forget the author's name, who he wrote
Marshall.
The Medium as a Message, right?
Yeah, Marshall McLuhan.
Marshall McLuhan's referred to television as a vast wasteland because of the quality of the programs that was on at the time. And, this was a phrase that we had to have embedded in our brains because it came up on every test and everything else. Wasteland. And TV was a wasteland. And Wasteland Playhouse was our parody of
shows that were bad to begin with. But we just took them and absolutely tore them apart. Here's The Fugitive, which is not called The Fugitive. You'll hear it. Here goes now. Coming up.
It's Wasteland Playhouse, featuring TV favorites that will never make it on radio. Now, The Fuselage.
The place is the airport. Inside a DC-10, a police lieutenant, Geritol by name, is taking his prisoner, Dr. Richard Nimble, to prison after being convicted of killing his wife. But Richard Nimble knows who really killed his wife. The trouble is, no one will believe him. He knows that it is the one-armed bandit. Now that we know, we can all be on his side. Suddenly, there is an explosion on the plane. In the confusion, Richard Nimble is free from his handcuffs and escapes from the fuselage. Today, we find escaped convict Richard Nimble, disguised as Dr. Jack, brain surgeon in a middle-sized country township.
Nurse, could you hand me that knife?
Oh, doctor, I love you. You're so mysterious and all that. Coming from out of nowhere to our neurosurgical center to help save the lives and minds of ordinary, normal people who deserve to live a full life and know the jewels of life and the simple pleasures of...
Nurse, this knife is too small. I need a bigger one.
But, doctor...
Hurry, nurse, and don't ask questions. This patient is dying.
Here, doctor, this is the biggest one we have.
This is good. 4 feet, sharp. This will go fine.
Doctor, why are you sawing off that man's arm when you're supposed to be making an incision in the cranium?
I'll let you in on a little secret, nurse.
Oh?
I'm really Richard Nimble.
Oh.
Escaped convict in perpetual pursuit of the one-armed bandit.
Oh.
Who killed my wife.
Oh.
If I can find him, it'll clear my good name.
I don't care who you are. I'm going to call Dr. Quick.
If I can cut this man's arm off, give him to Police Lieutenant Geritol, and make him believe this is the one-armed bandit, I'll be free.
Excuse me, Dr. Jack.
Yes, Dr. Quick.
The nurse has brought it to my attention that you are amputating this man's arm when you should be making an incision in his cranium.
He's not really Dr. Jack. He is Richard Nimble, the escaped convict.
I thought it was odd that your last name was the same as my first.
You're right, Dr. Quick. Why do you call yourself Dr. Jack, Richard Nimble?
Because Jack be nimble, Jack be quick.
Why didn't I think of that?
Excuse me. I'm Police Lieutenant Jared Hall. I'm looking for Richard Nimble, a convict who escaped from the fuselage of an airplane.
He's right here, Lieutenant, posing as Dr. Jack, the brain surgeon.
You can't take me in, Jared Hall. Here's the one-armed bandit, right here on the operating table. My name is Cleared.
But the man you're looking for has no left arm. This man has no right arm.
You cut off the wrong arm!
Richard Nimble, realizing that he had cut off the wrong arm in his attempt to pawn off the man on the operating table as the one-armed bandit, quickly leaves the hospital.
We won't get far.
No? How come?
We may try to find the one-armed bandit, but he'll never escape the long arm of the law.
But he did escape with the wrong arm, and I saw.
And so the hunt goes on. Will Richard Nimble ever escape the obsessive grip of Police Lieutenant Geritol, the slippery ways of the one-armed bandit, the suspicions of 1,000 unknown faces, the ratings? Tune in next time when we'll hear Richard Nimble say,
"What's an epilogue?"
on The Fuselage.
The Fuselage.
Wow. That
takes you back.
It sure takes me back, yeah. That takes me back.
Wow. I wish I had some of the other ones. Wasteland Playhouse, of course, we did a couple of versions of Magnet. Instead of Dragnet, we did Father Knows Less.
Yeah, Father Knows Less.
That was a good one because, Father Knows, we did Give It to Chipmunk.
Yes. Now people. Oh, Give It to Chipmunk. And remember the television show where, they were on a mountain or something?
The Waltons.
The Waltons.
We did the Walnuts.
The Walnuts, so that had kind of a creepy ending of that.
Well, in our Waltons, they ran out of food. They were cannibals. and at the end, they were always saying goodnight on the Waltons. Does anyone remember the Waltons? They'd always say goodnight, goodnight, this, goodnight. And of course, the goodnights got less and less because they were eating
people progressively. Yes. What about Columbo?
We did Rodumbo.
Rodumbo, yeah.
But Give It to Chipmunk has always been one of my favorites because I don't know if you people remember a TV show called Leave It to Beaver. You know, a lot of this stuff is played now on like real TV. There's whole channels that run this.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe you've seen some of these things. Well, there was Leave It to Beaver. Ours was Give It to Chipmunk. And, you know, and Chip was – Chip's father was Dracula. I don't know.
I don't know how we thought of that.
I don't know what we were reaching out in an area that that a lot of people didn't think could be reached, and it wasn't, you know, it just didn't catch on. Today this stuff has looked like, you know, I mean, comedy's gone through such a tremendous such changes and levels of consciousness that now it's looked upon as, and no less that was done on tape, and that doesn't even sound like you would do something today because everything sounds so clear and crisp and clean and
a whole different world.
The Fuselage, but I mean, it was like way out there. And what was great too was Tom. I know you did a lot of this. We would corrupt the songs. We took the actual themes of the TV shows. Sea Search.
Sea Search
was Sea Hunt.
Oh, that was one of our first.
Yeah, Sea Hunt was Sea Search. Mason Dixon.
Mason Dixon, yeah.
Was Perry Mason.
Yeah. Mason Dixon.
That's right, Mason Dixon. And then Tom wrote a lot of the theme songs for them, which we just played on a piano. But Dead Air had all its own original music because Tom and I also, for many years, were, and matter of fact, I think when we met, in school. That's how we got together. By we were musicians.
Yeah.
And
Wanoko. Did we have a band before Wanoko?
Well, we both had bands, but you. Joined. You joined our band, which had other people in it. And then we wrote songs together, and Tom wrote songs apart. And to this day, as I wrote in my blog, there are many of the songs that Tom wrote for some reason or another. Well, because they were good songs, but they were so for that time, kids, and we were kids. Kids were playing rock and roll, really hard hard rock and roll stuff, man.
You know, Clapton and. That kind of stuff.
And Tom introduced to this group in Brooklyn, and we were all, you know, we were all the top guys in Brooklyn. You know, we didn't go on to make records. Well, we made records, but we didn't do it. But I mean, we were playing the clubs and the things. We were, you know, hot. But Tom introduced the pop, not even pop, the standard, I mean, the standard, genre.
Yeah.
And influence.
I think Sinatra should have done, you know, some of them.
Yeah, well, he brought that in there and changed, again, when we talk about influencing and stuff like that, changed so many people. One of the better musicians in this particular bunch of guys was a guy who, I told you, Tom, called me at the end of January, and was lamenting, using your lyrics, a lyrics to your song, "January Shadows," and just left me a message on the machine saying, and he was talking about just maxi coats were gliding and so you know it's true, even you know you never know how you're going to influence people, but and every once in a while some of your songs come up and I talk to I'm with friends or something like that and I recite them and they don't know what I'm talking about, but again, that's and sometimes I play some of them, and I don't do original songs when I do my little coffee shop crap. I don't. But once in a while, I'll shove in a Tom Savino song there, and everyone will look at me like,
"Well, thank you."
You know, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Just like we actually paid you. I thought about it. I was trying to think about every song you wrote, and I can't even remember half of them. I can't remember all the lyrics and stuff. Not the ones we wrote together, the ones you wrote, like Mona. Remember Mona?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you say, do I remember it? I haven't thought about it in years, but you mention it. Yeah, I do remember. Let's not say what that was based on.
I wrote a song. I don't know. We can say what it's based on. This is alternative broadcasting. Tom and I one day skipped school. At college, which was something once we became friends, we did a lot. And we went to see the first full-length porno movie in a theater.
That's right. Now, younger people, that would be almost anybody based on our age. Yeah. Almost the entire world is younger. But back in those days, if you wanted to see porn, you actually had to go to a theater. You know?
or you had to... Well, no, there were you could get 8mm films. Does anyone know what an 8mm film might be? And you had projectors at home if you could do that. But a guy named Bill Osco.
Wow.
Yes.
You remember that?
I can't tell you why I even remember some of the things I do. But Bill Osco was actually the director who produced the first full length porn movie. It was not Damiano and Deep Throat. You know, Deep Throat became popular, and everybody thought that was the biggest, the first. And it wasn't.
No.
Bill Osco's Mona, it had a subtitle, and I don't remember the subtitle. We'd have to look it up.
I don't either.
We don't have a reference department here? Do we have a reference? Can you look up Bill Osco Mona?
You have a staff?
Well, I have some people, and I, you know, my documenteur is here.
Oh wow!
And we do have a reference.
I'm impressed.
We have a reference fellow. Otherwise, I'm doing all the controls myself. Hey, I'm not going to do any, unless you have to take a pee or something. We're not going to do our promo stuff. We're just going to go right to, we're just going to keep going here. And I'll tell everybody again, this is Cthulhu Chronicles. It is not El Chronicles del Cthulhu. It's not the Cthulhu Chronicles. It's not about me. It's Cthulhu Chronicles. And Tom Savino is with me, and once one half of the team in many different configurations of Savino, Cthulhu Savino, and also the man who was the brain behind Casino Loot Productions, which is the company, it was a legitimate company that we started, and it was headed right down the tubes. I tell this story all the time. It was headed right down the tubes. With this production stuff that we did, because none of these stations were not taking this stuff based on a couple of very unfortunate situations. But then we turned the company into a joke writing business, and Tom was the person who, I didn't know how to market. Tom was the person who marketed and made it a success through marketing in those days. I wonder if people, and today, of course, you can't get mailers. You don't really get mailers anymore. You get email HTMLs and things.
Yeah, everything is, well, I still get a few things in the mailbox, but probably because I'm so old, you know.
Yeah, we had a guy on a couple of weeks ago who was talking about how their social networking is now going to phones, going mobile, that they're doing what would in the old days be a mail piece. Companies are doing it through the phones, through your phone number, your mobile phones. Because everything's mobile now.
Yeah. I get like all kinds of ads and promos on text, like texted to my mobile phone. I don't know how they get my number, but that's another story.
So, well, you know, that's neither here nor there.
By the way, what? When I said, you know, I think my music could be so I thought Sinatra would do it. I was talking about Nancy. So, you know, I think Nancy could do it.
Oh, Nancy Sinatra. She could have played Mona, too, I think. Did you find something, Mrs. Smith? Hold on. Mrs. Smith has a thing here that says, Mona, the Virgin Nymph, 1970. It says the picture with WOM. This was the marketing thing. The picture with WOM.
Oh, wow.
Word of mouth.
Okay, there you go. Word of mouth.
Oh, you found it on IDBM. It was on IDBM, 1970s. This gave you people an idea. We're in college in 1970. We're in college. Did you hear that? My documenteur is here. He's in college right now. You get that, Jeremy? We were in college in 1970. Okay, so we've said enough about that. That'll give you an idea. We don't sound, someone said to me last week, you don't sound your age. And that's about the best compliment you could get at this age.
Yeah.
Before, I'm going to throw in some other stuff here and there, as I told everybody, I don't want this to completely be a reunion. These two guys are drinking and just talking about old times. We've given you an idea of how what we did and some of the stuff and junk we did, but I want to talk about how you got into the various things you do now. I know I was never surprised because as I was telling everyone in the beginning, you always had a penchant, for very weird things. And I was talking, did you hear me? You had the show on. Have you ever seen Peter Popoff? The guy was talking.
I heard you. I've never heard of him heard of that, but I did hear your introduction.
So you know, and I said, you're the kind of guy who would have concocted, if you had to concoct something, Tom was the kind of guy who would invent, I know what we'll do, we got this water, we put water in a little, and there are people out there who will believe that if they bless their bills and their bank accounts, because you know what's great about Tom was he always had, there was always a scheme behind everything, I'm not saying, he did anything, you know, no, this wasn't mail order fraud or anything. He didn't do any of that, but he always seemed to know that. But I wasn't surprised because you were the only person to listen to. Now, I'm gonna throw another name at you right now. You are the only person to seriously go back to the college now. You're the only person to seriously listen to Professor Briggs.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. I tell my current students about.
Do you? Was it Brig or Briggs? Briggs?
I think it was Briggs.
Briggs.
Yeah. The guy who traveled to Egypt often every night.
What's Egypt? A guy. Yeah. This is our first. This will settle all the college stuff. This is the first professor we have in any college class. We're both coming out of high school and whatever. Okay, and this guy is he's some kind of African American. I mean, some kind, because he just doesn't. I don't know what. Was he Egyptian? Or was he?
Well, he used to go to Egypt every night.
Well, we gotta get to that. No. Okay, but anyway, he's this dark fellow with tight hair, and even in the bitterest of winter, he just wore a sports jacket. This guy.
Yeah, and New York City, that's pretty cold, you know.
And he was a math teacher. He was math. Another math nut. And, and he told the first time we had, or one of the first times, as the story will go, that we had a class, he said, you know, excuse me, I'm a little bit tired because I just come back from Egypt.
Well, yeah, and we said, well, wait a minute.
And you tell
just
them.
Had your class yesterday.
You're into this kind of stuff and everything. So you tell him why he said you can't, and we thought, but he would get on a plane or anything. Yeah. What? Tell them.
Well, this was a big, big influence in my life, actually. Because he started telling us about astral projection, and I was hanging on every word, because when I was 15 and ill, I had an experience where I left my body, and over the years many people have left my body, but I left my body, you know. And I talked to people about it, and they said, oh, you were just dreaming, you know. And I said, no, because I was hanging out at the ceiling looking down at my body, you know. And until I realized I was out of my body, and a sense of fear just took over, and I kind of was sucked back into my body. But then after that experience, one becomes very curious as to what that was. And Professor Briggs was talking about that. So he was like the first person other than myself that I knew had this experience, and he was controlling it and going to Egypt and wherever he wanted to go every night. So yeah, that was how I got involved with that. And I started to, study it. I began to study how to control doing astral projection. I was never successful at that, because I would always reach the point where I felt as if I was going to leave my body again, and then I would just get overwhelmed with fear, and I was not able to leave it. There was one other time that I did leave my body, and this sounds like a joke or a build-up.
What's great about this is that we're talking about a man who leaves his body and who has obviously left his mind at the same time. Go ahead, tell them.
Yes. No, I left my body one other time when I was in my 30s, when I was very, very healthy. So one time I left when I was very ill, and one time I left when I was very healthy. And I had just discovered yoga in my life, and it was a wonderful day. I was doing yoga on a cliff overlooking the Pacific Ocean, and my wife and I were staying at this wonderful place. And that night, we went to sleep, and lo, and there it was, up at the ceiling again, this time looking down at both of us. But I've never been able to control it. So there you go.
So twice it's happened?
Twice it's happened, and Professor Briggs, when he started talking about his routine experiences with it, like daily, you save really save a lot on baggage and things like that, you know, traveling that way.
Today, though, today, if you think about it, certainly after the 9/11 experience, that would be probably a cherished thing. People could leave their bodies and, right? I mean, you can't frisk them or anything. But you had a penchant also well before that. Like you said, you left your body, but you knew witches. Right?
Oh, yeah.
You studied witchcraft?
Witches, and I'll tell you the story about Randy the witch, I was, my first wife and I were getting a divorce, and I was out here in Los Angeles, and a TV producer liked an idea I had for a TV show called Brooklyn Roads, which was going to feature comedy, famous comedy people from Brooklyn, and there were a lot then from Brooklyn, Woody Allen and so on, many, many more. This producer liked the idea, and he said, well, go back to New York and get letters of interest from the New York State Office of Film and the New York City Office of Film. So I did. I came back, and I did that, and I called the governor's office of film and television, and the receptionist answered, and she kept me on the phone for a long time and said, oh, I think this is a great idea, she said, this Brooklyn Roads thing. I think you can get a letter. But she kept me on much longer than I even needed to be on. She just started talking personally. And before I knew it, she started telling me things no one could possibly know about me unless you were either stalking me for my whole life or you were psychic. And I said, how did you possibly know that? And she said, oh, I'm sorry. I was channeling. And I said, what do you mean channeling? And she said, well, I have this ability to channel, and I pick up on people's energy, and I understand what's going on in their lives. But it comes and goes, you know, she said. So anyway, I said, you know, I have to know more about this because that, you know, I was the kind of guy that was really interested in that kind of stuff. And I asked her if I could take her to dinner that Friday. And when that Friday did roll around, she did accept. But when that Friday rolled around, she said, you know, let's forget about going out. Just bring a bottle of wine and come over, and I'll make dinner here. And she did.
In a cauldron. That was the first sign something was really weird. No, go ahead.
She said there were brooms everywhere. So I just, she during dinner she started again channeling, and when she channeled, her face changed. It got very round, and she then told me things about my life that no one could know, and it just flipped me out. The first thing I noticed in her apartment was she had a bunny or a little rabbit hopping around, and I said, this rather odd pet. And she said, it's not a pet, it's a familiar. And I said, what's that? And she said, well, a familiar is what a witch uses an animal there that's close to them, that they use the energy of the animal to project spells on people. And I said, whoa. So this is, you know, by this time I'm like saying, what did I get myself into here? But
later on, I missed you. I missed that. Hold on. Can you hear me?
Hello? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Great. I'm sorry. I talked over you and I missed the last thing you said.
Oh, yeah. There was a part of the evening where I started wondering if I was, maybe shouldn't be there, you know. But no, she told me all about this stuff, and she channeled. And when she was finished channeling, her face kind of went back to normal again. And I was just totally, totally hooked on that a human being had the ability to do this. She showed me things about the witchcraft religion, about Wicca. And she showed me some documents, some handwritten rituals.
We just happen to have a tape of her. No. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
When she started doing that, I said, let me get out of here.
Yeah.
No, she showed me that. But I was headed back for Los Angeles, you know. And I said, do you have to be a witch to do this stuff? And she said, no. She said, you know what? When you go back to Los Angeles, look up Silva Mind Control, Jose Silva, S-I-L-V-A. And it's an organization that could teach you in intuition and other things. Anyway, I went back, and lo and behold, right in my in the San Fernando Valley there, they were having, in a few days, they were going to start a week-long teaching from the Silva, Jose Silva Mind Control.
Did you go through Silva Mind Control?
Yeah, an entire week. It was 1 week of experiences. And besides bending a spoon with your energy, I don't mean like physically bending it. I mean like energetically bending it, like sort of melting it. I haven't had much use for that in my life, but the other things I have had much use for, and they taught me how to use my intuition, which is basically get out of the way, get out of your own way, get out of your head, and trust what's coming to you. And sure enough, the intuition was right. They gave me an envelope, and in the envelope was a picture of a guy. It was a sealed envelope. I didn't know this until later. So I had to scan this person that I didn't even know. So I had to see the person in my mind's eye. And I said, well, it's a guy in his 50s, and he's pudgy, and he's bald. He's balding. And I have a scan. I scanned his body with a horizontal beam of light. And every time I went up and down, there was a black spot in his throat, you know. So I mentioned that to the group of people and the teacher who was there. And then we opened the envelope, and there was a picture of a guy very, very close to what I had pictured. And sure enough, he was in his 50s, and he had throat cancer. And then the teacher, you know, then we sent him energy to heal. I don't know what happened to the guy. I don't know if he, you know, was any better since we sent him energy or not. But I do know that the intuitive experience was for real. You know, I was the only one holding the envelope. I was, you know, and then they opened it, and that was it. So I was all excited about that experience, and I called Randy, the witch in New York, and I said, hey, this is incredible. I did this, that, and the other. And she said, you have two more days of teaching. She said, on the last day, you promise me you're going to call me as soon as you get out of the very last teaching. I said, okay, I will. Now, of course, there were no cell phones and everything then, so I had to use coin phone, but I promised her I would do that as soon as I had the last teaching. And the last teaching was developing a laboratory in your mind where you go to solve problems, to know anything that can be known in the universe. You can know it in your laboratory. There's a filing cabinet for men, a filing cabinet for women, and every man who ever existed and every woman who ever existed, it has a file in there, and you can look through their files and find information. But the very, very last part of that, of having a laboratory, was developing or learning who your mentors were. You were going to have a male mentor and a female mentor. And the way we did this was we imagined, in a trance state, we imagined that we were in a theater and we're looking at a stage with a curtain. And when the curtain opens up, there is your male mentor. Whoever it is, you have to accept that's your male mentor. So I did that, and the curtain opens up, and who is my male mentor? Do you know who they answer it?
I believe your male mentor was Steve Allen.
That's right. You did. Yeah, you remember that. Yeah. So Steve Allen.
Now I didn't take Silver. I didn't pay for Silver, but I took it through two other people. Because remember Jim and Fanny? That was their honeymoon.
I didn't know that.
They went to Silver Control for their honeymoon, and when they came back, they went through that stuff with me, and I created a laboratory. You forgot the screen. There's a big screen where you can see anything you want to see in your laboratory, correct? There's a screen there, and I had a male and a female. Tell us your female, and then I'll tell you who my male and female be.
Okay, so the curtain opened for me, and it was Steve Allen. Which, you know, made a lot of sense for me, but we won't get into that. And then the very, very last thing was the screen opens up and there's your female mentor. Well, screen opens up and it's Randy the Witch. Randy the Witch is my female mentor in my Silva laboratory. So I'm all excited that the thing ends and I promised to call her, and I went right to a payphone and I called her. And her answering machine was on. They actually had answering machines back then. With tape, people remember what tape is. And she said, I'm not home, leave your message, so on and so forth. If this is Tom in Los Angeles, you never need to even call me anymore because you could always reach me in your laboratory. So that was, you know, the whole experience hooked me, totally hooked me.
I think that ultimately, whether you believe in this being any kind of, extra sensory perceptive thing, didn't matter. Because I still go into this little lab. It's a place I just went to in my head where I thought I could solve problems. And it's actually a very psychologically sound idea to go there and to have actual figures of people who you could talk to and get questions. Because your brain is usually, we've done a lot of shows on the brain, Tom, and we got a lot of people who do psychology and stuff like that. And the brain is actually so filled with so many answers because it absorbs everything you hear, but you don't have everything at your disposal. But in this particular state that you go in this laboratory, you could get and talk to people and get it. And I think it's important, as she said, that the people who become your mentors were recognizable and influential figures, right?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Absolutely.
I got my male mentor and still is Bob Hope.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ever tell me this before? I don't remember.
You're not having an extrasensory moment. We must have talked.
A sensory moment then.
This I never understood until later in life, when I watched so many of her movies. After this, I knew her, and I knew of her. And I watched her TV show and I saw movies when I was younger, but later on I watched and I learned a lot about her life, and I realized why she, without even knowing a lot about her life, why she became my female figure. And you just have to find out and go read about this person, then you might know more about me. My female mentor, would I be mentress? No, it's mentor. Mentor.
Yeah, I still say.
Loretta Young.
Loretta Young. You know what? Now that you say that, I remember you told me this, yeah.
When I did the thing about the curtain, which was really funny, because she came to me just as she opened up her television show, which she walked through a curtain.
Walked through a curtain, yeah.
And there was this music, dun dun da da dun dun da da dun da da, and she came out with a flowing dress.
Yeah, I mean, I totally see it.
But the odd thing is about, like I said, I learned later in life. When I read about her and saw some documentaries and stuff, I went, wow, she was like, she's very similar to things that I did not know about myself until years went by. So anyway, so that's the silver mind control thing. But now, how did that go into the Ambanamiyam stuff, the meditation, the health thing, you know, everything? Because, you know, you and I were incredibly abusive to our bodies as young people in many ways. So how did you turn over into that?
Yes. Oh, sorry, my doorbell. No, I'm only kidding. Those are my yoga bells.
Yoga bells. Okay.
Yoga bell. It's Krishna time in the city. Okay. You know what? I'm finding out as I age I'm really discovering a lot of my psychological problems, you know. Now, some may say these are problems. Some may say, oh, no, this is a good thing, you know. But I certainly have the drive to... I'm a seeker, all right? I seek, and then, you know, and it's like, oh, and I try this, and I try that, and I try this, and I try that. So the silver mind control was, it was very good, actually. You know, I mean, I when I think back now in my life, I said, well, that was a pretty good thing to do, you know. But I think then at the time, it was like, oh, you know, this is a bunch of BS. it's not even it's not religion, or it's not, you know, it's, I need something more spiritual or something like that, and so on and so forth. So I started investigating, and then I looked into transcendental meditation. And I was just telling one of my students at Polytechnic High School, which gets a shout out because I promised I would say Polytechnic High School in Sun Valley, California. I was telling one of my students who asked me about meditation, he said he wanted to learn transcendental meditation. And I said, well, unless you have like $2,000, you can't learn the transcendental meditation, because that's how much it costs to get your mantra. And I said, but I was in the same boat as you, when I was in my 20s, and I wanted to learn transcendental meditation. So I read about it, and I pretty much learned it, but I didn't get the official mantra. I just used my own mantra, which was deep peace. And honestly, and especially with what I know now about meditation after all these years and all the various kinds of meditation that I've done, using deep peace as a mantra or you know, I don't know, almond joys or something, you know, using any sound that means something to you as the mantra would work just as well. It works just as well. You don't need the official transcendental mantra to do transcendental meditation. Well, then, you know, that's, I got into meditation then. Then I got into yoga. Yoga was really, really hooked me, as you know. And if I've stayed with anything, consistently, like I said, I go from one thing to another, but yoga has been a consistent thing in my life. And of course, as you learn, in the West, here in the West, in America, people think of yoga as just, most people think of it as just the movements and the postures and the bending and the flexing and the stretching. And it's so much more than that. Having learned the transcendental meditation before, I know that doing the asanas, the positions of yoga is actually helps in your meditation. It is not something separate from yoga itself. And in the last 5 or 6 years, Kundalini yoga has been my real yoga, because that, for me, that puts it all together. It puts the mantras, the sound healing, the mantras, and the positions all together.
I had a bowl of that for dinner.
Kundalini, yeah. Yes. It's an Italian dish. And actually, my teacher, my favorite Kundalini teacher, Lauren, she loves to go to it every year. She goes to Italy, and she takes people here to Italy for Kundalini workshops. She's become, I asked her, are you Italian? Is your family Italian? She isn't. She just fell in love with Italy, and she goes every year. And she's my Kundalini Linguini teacher.
We had, you and I used to listen to, this is back in the early days of our California experiences, when we listened to Alan Watts. That's when Alan Watts became parts of our lives, and I've spread those books around, because that's like not necessary. It's not religious and stuff, but it's the whole Zen thing. You remember all that?
Oh yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, his son was on my show.
Yes, remember? I remember when you said that, and it was a very unfortunate time in terms of my having time to listen. I was not. But by the way, you have an archive of your show, right?
I'll see if I can find that somewhere and get it off to you. You can just download it. I'll send you a link.
Okay, that would be great. I'd like to. Yeah, I would like to hear that.
Because
yeah.
He's the keeper of the key. He has all the has all the files and everything and all those things we used to listen to on KPFK. Was that it?
Yeah, KPFK. Yeah, Alan Watts. Man, he's great. You know. I love Alan Watts. I've learned a lot about spirituality and from Alan Watts.
And you were I didn't tell anyone, but you know, I didn't tell anyone. It's not like it's a secret. I don't know a lot about it, but I mean, you went to a Catholic school and Catholic high school.
Yes, I went to a Catholic Catholic elementary school, grammar school, and the Catholic high school. It was very frustrating, especially the Catholic high school.
And you had a and there was a very famous guy, a brother, because they were brothers of that in high school. I don't even know the order of brothers. I don't know the difference between brothers and priests or what have you like that, who eventually we all died, but I mean, he eventually died, and you learned well before anything was out in the open that he was a gay brother, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. He was multisexual. As
well, who wasn't, really? I mean, what do you mean? He's a brother. He shouldn't be any sexual, should he?
No. After I graduated from high school, he was a big influence in my life. Brother Jonathan.
Yes.
Brother Jonathan. He was an art teacher, and, you know, I just thought he was the coolest thing. And after I graduated, I went to see him, and we had coffee and lunch. And this is in Brooklyn Heights, which was right around the corner from where the brothers stay. I forget what they call where they stay. The brother's place. Yeah, that's it. Something, I don't know.
Brother's Pizza.
Yeah. But Brother John's Pizza or something. But yeah, so they, you know, we had a very frank talk. And he said, straight out, said to me, he said, "Tom, I fucked anything that moved." You know, I can say that, can I? I just did.
You sure can. We have a parental guidance thing at the beginning. No, yeah, no problem.
So, yeah. And he said, even our school was 95% taught by brothers.
But wait a second. So when you were in high school, you didn't move?
No, I didn't move. I did not move.
He was exaggerating a bit, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. But, you know, on that issue, by the way, you know, he's in my entire 12-year history of Catholic elementary school and Catholic high school, I've never been molested or anything, and I really, really have it's caused me a lot of pain of rejection, that all these priests and everything have, you know, coming on to people. No one's ever come on to me. Of course, I'm joking now.
Poor Brother John. I don't know why. When I talk, I'm cutting you out, so I don't know why that happens all of a sudden. You talking?
I am now.
Okay.
You're not coming. But, yeah, he we had most of the teachers at our high school were Franciscan brothers, but there were a few so-called lay teachers. And the other art teacher was a woman, and as females are, Brother Jonathan said, yeah, even he did it with her.
Yeah.
So he did it with everyone, and unfortunately, he did die of AIDS. So, yeah.
So your background comes from there, and then you went on. And do this. Now, weren't you teaching? Because I used to do a little commercial for you here on the show, because you had that little place in...
The LA Ashram.
Yeah.
I went to school to become a yoga teacher, and I became a yoga teacher, and I'm still a certified yoga teacher, certified with the...
Who do you certify? How do you certify a yoga teacher?
By you? Oh my God, I can't believe I can't think of the name of the organization. It's an international organization.
The International Yoga Certification, the IYC, something like that?
Yoga, oh my God, I can't believe it. My memory has not been helped by any of these practices whatsoever.
Well, you need to spend more time in your laboratory thinking about it.
But, I'm a 200-hour I'm at the 200-hour level, and then they have a 500-hour level, and then they, then you just go to Nirvana after that. I don't know what happens, but yeah. So I became a yoga teacher. I taught a little while at the Glendale Yoga, and then I tried to open a studio here in our guest house in our property here, and there's so many restrictions in Burbank for zoning and this, and it just became impossible. It just became impossible. So that never really got off the ground.
I got to talk to you one day about, you don't know about this, but I've talked about this on the show a lot, a kind of anti-meditation thing that I have. Now, that doesn't mean I'm against meditation, but the anti-meditation would be doing, would be getting, finding your own peace of mind and your own self by doing the exact opposite of what you do in meditation, as opposed to, and that is letting all the noise go through while you're conscious, letting everything from your brain in, out, because we do so much editing every single day, and then the things that we want to retrieve from banks of our brains we can't do, and then we wind up with bad dreams or what have you. But I'll have to talk to you one day about being a neo-postmodernist.
Mm-hmm. A neo-post. Modernist, okay.
Yeah, you kind of figure it out, and then you and I will talk off mic or what have you, because I don't want to put these people through it again. But it really has to do with being able to let your mind, open the doors and stop working against the things you're thinking, because we think so much that we don't feel we want to think for moral reasons or any kind of reasons whatsoever. But to be able to let all those thoughts come through. Because, you know, when I first started doing this show, and people said, well, you know, what are you on? You know, you're on something. There's no possible way that you could be talking for 2 hours. And I didn't have guests in those days because we didn't even have phone. We didn't even have phones to connect and everything. It was like we didn't have Skype. We didn't have anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We were lucky because that's when broadband started. So we hardly even had an audience. But the idea was, so I said, the only way I'm going to be able to do this and talk, aside from having good influences, about with people who were who talked, was to actually be able to just trust what I was thinking and where it went. And of course, that means when you're on a subject, you know, you go down rabbit holes, you come back, you go forward, you go all over. But to actually not suppress any thought whatsoever consciously, and it's kind of a conscious, not that you're unconscious with meditation, but you know, you get into that state of, you know, that state of one, that's what the mantra is for, where you're just peaceful and your blood pressure goes down and everything like that. There's a way of doing that as you're conscious. And that's how I got through this stuff. And people, I tried to tell people about it. I guess maybe I should have charged $2,000.
Yeah. It'd make it $3,000 if you add a little blessed water to it.
That's right. This is Cotolo Chronicles, and we're with someone who you know, we know what we should do. I know you're a busy guy, and you got all this stuff and everything going on. But I think, you know, every once in a while, we should do a Cotolo Savino Chronicles. You should like be on.
Wow, that's interesting. That's a nice offer. And actually, I guess we, you know, with the technology today, like you're saying, I mean, we could do it just like we're doing now, I guess.
That's it. And then one thing good about this show, not good, but I mean, there's one thing that's different about this show than all the other stuff, even though it is a podcast. And this show that we're doing right now will be played all next week on all sorts of different internet radio stations, including Shalom Radio in Quebec. So there'll be any number of places you can listen to the show, download it or what have you. And so what was I saying? I was saying that we could do this and, you know, just pick a topic and talk about it and joke about it and do what we want to do about it every now and then. I think that would be great.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah. Let's keep that open. My life has been very hectic in the last couple of years. And as you know, from a few days ago when we've connected just to test to see if this works, you know, Cheryl was injured, and I'm kind of thinking a lot of the, doing a lot of the stuff that she had been doing while I was working. But I foresee a space that of time where this can happen.
Yeah, it's totally casual thing. I mean, we don't, you know, there's no, it's not like there's no necessary schedule or anything to it. We just do it when we want to do it. That's what's one, another great thing about doing this is that nobody's on my back or up my butt about it. We just do what we want to do, and we do it. So I don't see any reason. There's a number of people who keep coming on the show. Once a month, we have this wonderful psychologist, and we have this other guy who's like this incredible guy. He teaches at that place. I don't even remember, in Pennsylvania. He's the smartest guy in the world, Dr. Woldar. And he comes on, and we talk about, you know, the space and math and all sorts of stuff. So we do have a number, and we also have Veronica Monet. Hey, you know who was on this show once?
Oh.
Ready for this? Do you remember the name Annie Sprinkle?
Yes.
She's been on the show.
Annie Sprinkle was on the show.
Yeah, she does exactly what the kind of thing, like, you know, she's an ex-porn star, for those of you who don't know or don't remember. And you can be a friend on Facebook, too. But she does all this stuff. I don't know, holistic health and wonderful sex openness.
Okay. Yeah.
But all these, so we've had, you know, a lot of people, so there's no reason why you can't be part of that, you know, be one of our panel there and be on when you can.
Well, that's thank you for the invitation, and I accept.
There you go. How do you like that, friends? How do you like that? And Tom will also be in the, you'll be in the documentary, won't he? Yeah, I'm asking my documenteur here. Okay, take a breath now, Tom, and listen to this. There's a little something else to listen to. Then we'll come back and run it right up to 11. You ready for this? Okay, now remember, friends, comrades, listeners, audience, what you're going to hear is a routine that we did a number of episodes on one of these programs we used to do. And one of the voices you will be hearing is Tom. We'll talk about it after we do this. Tom, this is a surprise for you. Here comes.
Welcome to another heartwarming episode of Mel and Collie Baby, featuring Collie Baby, the wonder dog, who not only walks and talks, but refuses to have her puppies paper trained on anything else but the London Times. We now join Collie Baby and her trusty master and pal, Mel Finkelstein, in another exciting adventure.
Golly, 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 gosh, golly, baby. I've got a feeling another adventure's about to come our way. You'd better finish repairing Dad's car quick.
Another minute, Mel. Just let me release the intake manifold and reconnect the battery. There.
Boy, Dad's sure going to be grateful that you were able to fix the car. Maybe this will mean he'll put some more money in that special bank account he has for you, so that someday you can go to Princeton and get that degree you always wanted.
It sure would be nice to get that PhD.
Look, Golly Baby, a fire in the woods, and there's Forest Ranger Jones and the entire county fire department. This means adventure. Let's go!
Hi, Mel. How's the folks?
Show me, Forest Ranger Jones. How did the fire start?
Probably some careless picnicker, barbecue, and hot dogs. No offense, Collie Baby.
It seems to be growing pretty fast. Why aren't you putting it out?
Well, since it looked like rain, we figured we'd wait a few minutes and maybe try to save some of our reservoir's water.
Wow-wee! What excitement! The whole county may burn down while we wait for it to rain!
You call that excitement? I think it's pretty dumb.
Look, it's gone to Old Man Hooligan's barn. Jay, I sure wish it was nighttime. What a sight that would be.
Sure hope it rains soon. Looks like Miss Old Girlie's schoolhouse is next. You hear the weather report on the radio, Collie Baby?
Did you ever think of the fact that you may save your own water supply and burn down half the county at the cost?
What do you think is worth more?
Give me those fire hoses.
Wow-wee! Kelly, baby, putting out the fire itself, and everyone's gonna be saved.
Everyone except me, that is. What's the mayor going to say when he finds out that I used all of this water from our supply to put out a fire?
There. Now swing your men over to the other side, and they can do the rest.
Ah, Callie, baby, I love you. You're the smartest, most human dog a boy ever had.
I resent that human part.
I gotta go, Fox, Ranger Jones. See ya!
I could tell the mayor there was a leak in the hose.
Be with us soon for another spine-tingling adventure with Mel and Collie Baby.
Can you do that voice?
I haven't done it in many years, Mel, but I still can do it, I think.
Later on. You know, I took that, and there's another thing too, I took that character. I took Mel with me, and got into a lot of trouble, later on when I did this routine, with Wolfman, many years later, and we actually got kicked. I used Mel, that same voice as Mel, but I used him as Little Tommy. I called him Little Tommy. And he was this kid who was always in the audience of this kid show, and, the kid show was Pervo the Clown.
Okay.
And Pervo always had this, he always picked out Little Tommy and like completely, I mean, he just did these horrible things.
Oh, God.
To him. I wish I played that a few times. So Pervo the Clown and Tom, and I used, when I had to think of somebody to be, I thought of Mel Finkelstein, and I did that, that thing.
That's great. The Mel Finkelstein guy.
You never had any use for Collie Baby though, huh?
That didn't come up much. But you know, when I hearing that bit though,
mm-hmm.
It wasn't. If I do say so myself, it wasn't bad. Laura Grassi. Have you heard from them at all? The mountain ranger. Was it a mountain ranger? That's Frank Grassi, right?
Yeah, I should mention that he was the producer, Frank Grassi. I think I told you I found him on Facebook and tried to, and he hasn't answered me yet. I don't know where Laura may be located. I don't know if they're together. I don't know. I just hope they're both alive. I mean, I know Frank's still alive because he's got a Facebook page. Like dead people don't have Facebook pages.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they were involved in the show there too. And Frank did all the production on that, on those. Which at that time was quite sophisticated for that time.
Yeah, it really was. It was.
But you know, I don't even think people. And you see now, there's a lot of young people who go. They don't really get the concept. And again, this is also a part of influence and stuff. Because I don't know if people remember the what was the name of the dog on the Rocky and Bullwinkle, the smart dog.
No one. Peabody.
Yeah, Mr. Peabody.
I think it was Peabody, yeah.
Mr. Peabody was the incredibly smart dog, and the kid was the jerk, just like in this. But and our dog, like, you know, a cartoon Lassie, who was really smart but didn't really talk, was a collie. Lassie was a collie. I know I feel funny having to explain this, but I think I have to. But so he was Collie Baby. That was the name of the dog. Mel was just Mel. He was just this stupid kid who was, you know, a jerk. And the idea was that Mel and Collie Baby is, I don't think anybody knows it, there's a song, a very famous old standard. Come to me, my melancholy baby. Melancholy.
Yeah, see? Melancholy.
So we made it Mel and Collie Baby. And at the end, when the mother calls, always end at the end where she calls, and using the lyrics of the song. Come to me, my melancholy baby. I have to explain that. It's amazing.
Yeah, hearing it and appreciating it, at least from my perspective, I was saying, boy, I wonder, a lot of people probably don't even get the reference, the Melancholy Baby.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if anybody was. It's amazing. It's just amazing how the degrees of separation between the stuff that we did and now, even though there are, like you said, there's all these shows on, but I don't think kids are watching.
Yeah.
It's probably just the old folks, the people, you know, the baby boomer generations are watching those things. The kids aren't watching that.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, Cheryl's my wife, everybody, but she just got a couple of DVDs of my friend Flicka and Sky King and...
God, you know, we've been watching on YouTube, we've been watching Amos and Andy. This is the funniest thing of all time.
Boy, how... That was certainly politically incorrect. Yeah. Even back in the 60s, it was politically incorrect. You know, but.
I know. So are you going to do stand-up? You were talking about doing stand-up. Are you going to do a stand-up?
Well, I haven't got up the nerve yet, but it's getting there. I work out my material on Twitter, TJ Savino at Twitter. If you want to, you know, read some of my tweets, and usually 99% of the time my tweets are jokes, you know, and I'm kind of working on a routine. And I may give it a shot here at, there's a place called Burbank Arms, which has an open mic night, and I might try it, yeah.
I've turned you on to a lot of people, although you don't have a lot of people, but I mean, I keep telling everyone to go on over there. You don't want to give away your whole routine, though, on Twitter.
Oh, no. No, I would, you know, but it's so fast. You know, I mean, the Twitter is like, it comes and goes. You just, whatever jokes get like a good response, I could use in my stuff. And, I mean, if I gave it a shot, if I really try this, I only got 5 minutes. You just have 5 minutes at first and then, you know, see what happens after that.
And you do have to put it together, though. You can't just stand there and do jokes. You have to put it into some kind of context, right?
Oh, yes, I know.
Yeah, I know you know. I'm saying that for people just thinking it up there and just tell jokes.
Like get some sort of cohesive routine there, you know.
So a joke, stand-up meditation. You know, why don't you just stay home and astral project to the open mic?
That's a possibility. Just for I don't know, there's probably anybody cares out there, but that organization that I belong to is called Yoga Alliance. Yoga Alliance.
No, I can see why you forgot it. That's a tough one there. Well, you're looking good. You lost some weight, didn't you?
I did. I lost a lot of weight. I've been following one of the meditative things I have been staying with for a long time is called Holosync. Holosync, HOLOSYNC. And it's not religious or not, it doesn't belong to any kind of tradition or philosophy. It's based on the science of sound and using a tone in the right ear and a tone that's slightly off in the left ear. And because it's slightly off, but scientifically like calibrated to be exactly slightly off, it causes your brain waves to be at very deep levels.
Well, then I have tinnitus or tinnitus, however you want to say it. And that means, so I must be constantly at this level.
It's very possible. Maybe that's the answer to this. The answer as to why you're able to do this for hours at a time, you know, and not be on anything. It's probably your tinnitus or tinnitus or something.
I used it to meditate because, you know, the best cure for tinnitus is sound, more sound and noise because you don't hear it.
Yeah, that's true. I occasionally get that, by the way.
Occasionally, you know, that's from all these headphones. It's from all those years of playing music. And I was telling someone the other day about our gig and our protest when we played at Brooklyn College during protest week. You know, these people don't, you know, look, you got to watch these documentaries about the 60s and stuff. And you see all these people marching and doing all this anti-war stuff. That's when we were in college, you know, and we were in a band. And I was telling people about us doing this for the first time. These four people in the band were on this giant stage. And you came out with your, with your construction hat.
Yeah.
And a peace sign.
Yeah. You remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that because it was hilarious.
Well, you know, it's really funny you mentioned that. It's coincidentally funny because today in American Lit class, we were civil disobedience, and there are photos of demonstrators wearing military type gear, and they're using the subway, and some of them were wearing helmets, you know, and it's totally reminded me of the time when I had the construction helmet, peace symbol on.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty funny. Always a surprise, always some slanted wisdom, and a lot of humor from Tom Savino, my former, and always my in a certain way always my partner in all of this. I'm good. That's me now taking us out here as we, because we're going to have to leave for now.
Okay.
So I want to thank you again and tell everyone, listen to it, listen to this again and what have you. Tom, we'll be back, when we work it out and we'll talk about more things. I can't thank you. I've talked about this for years and I'm so glad you were able to make it here tonight, Tom.
Well, thank you. Really, really pleased that I did here. I appreciate it. A lot of fun.
We will talk again, cause we're always in touch, one way or another. Say hi to Cheryl and get better and everything.
Okay. Take care.
For now, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Tom Savino, right here on the one and only Cthulhu Chronicles. Could I ever have chronicled without that man? I don't know. It's the first time I've actually seen him. See, because I was watching him on the Skype. I didn't know he was going to be on. When we tested it, he wasn't on the Skype video, but he was on a video call there. And you didn't see that, but he saw it. And what was I saying? I was saying, and I haven't seen him in a while, so it was nice to see him because he's gotten thinner and bolder. I mean, I'm so glad I have all my hair. Hey, what? You just, I don't know.
That's some control over there. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, and so does everyone else as we hightail it out, taking it right up to the final minute of being able to back time this theme. Mr. Tom Savino, right here on Cthulhu Chronicles, Y2K plus 13. Listen to it again and again and again, and, you know, we'll be back. We'll be back. We'll be around, hopefully, as things go. So, you know, what is it? Luck, smarts, guts, and hearts. Keep it all together, my friends. And when it's not together, let her rip. Take it apart. Good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you are located. See, I don't want to end it with R. And thank you for listening again. We'll be back, but for now, I have nothing more to say.